This is the beginning of class 8.
Sashi Bhurghi Jushin Netosham Viravin Shinyande Yambadi Sangye Shindu
Don't try to figure out what's the theoretic, and you know, if it doesn't say, he probably didn't want us to worry about it. There are other schools who explain this example differently. Mm-hmm. It's a all he's not emphasizing that at all. He's saying after the spell is cast, that's what's going on. So he doesn't emphasize that. I think what might, yeah, any other questions?
Yeah, I was gonna ask the two bodhisattvas. In the example of the last two types, the magician and the spectator are both, in this case, bodhisattvas, right?
I don't think the one who's the...
Latecomer? The newcomer?
Well, the definition in the text describes it as those bodhisattvas...
Yeah, the newcomer didn't say... Did it say bodhisattva?
Said a non-Buddha. Said a non-Buddha.
A realized being.
Okay, now it's just someone who's perceived into this directly. It doesn't have to be a bodhisattva. I don't see why it should have to be a bodhisattva.
Not get a realized
I don't think it has to be a bodhisattva.
Well, it distinguishes that the second one is.
He gets
so
it as
presumably...
That's the idea.
Right. Well, what I told Ariel was, in my opinion, it's just overkill. He could have said first to tenth fullness, but he said eighth to tenth, so you know it's really...
Okay, well then that gets actually even closer to it. Then in the four divisions that we learned a couple of weeks ago...
Yeah.
The last two people in this, which of the four divisions do each of those last two will reside upon?
1 to 10.
Oh. No, not the boomies, the four divisions.
Oh, it doesn't apply because what I'm telling you is that the person who comes later is any Arya. After following him.
Both of them are any Arya. Two and three. The magician and the spectator have to be Aryas because the definition says between periods of realizing emptiness directly for the second.
Yeah. The magician, the char, and the other person.
Yeah.
They're both artists. No, that's both a given. But I'm saying, what's distinguishing between the two? Along the lines of the four levels that we learned.
No, it doesn't apply to the four levels.
The late comer, the magician.
It has to apply to the four levels because the level two is an aria. So they both have to be at least level two.
They don't have to be bodhisattvas.
But it's not clear that these have to be bodhisattvas.
All right, well, it says bodhisattva specifically in the text.
As but one example.
Right. Mm-hmm. But if they were bodhisattvas, then which of those?
Second and third.
Second and third, respectively.
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
Second or third in their state of meditation, or second or third outside of their state of meditation.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it
means.
Before Buddha.
It doesn't sound like it.
One is not in direct perception.
It makes it sound like that the magician, okay, is the one who is on the second level, has seen emptiness directly, but while not in the meditation perceiving emptiness, still sees things as self-existent, but doesn't believe it that way. Whereas the third example...
That's why I didn't publish this thing. It's probably incorrect on that point. Probably the third person also, the third kind of bodhisattva, also sees things as self-existent, but doesn't believe them.
What is it that distinguishes between them?
One is in perception.
If he's in a state of meditation on emptiness, he doesn't see anything. So it's
Let me answer his question because we're at a different place.
Mm-hmm.
What distinguishes the last three from the first seven is apparently not that what I said that things don't appear that they're self-existent. It's that they've gotten to such a high level in seeing emptiness that they've abandoned the bad thought obstacles, but they haven't abandoned the obstacles to omniscience.
Which means that they
things
still
are still appearing to them
as in two different ways. Right?
But very, very, very subtly. Mm. And that's the only distinction. But I'm still studying it. I'm still not sure, and that's why I don't want
to. Now, does that correlate to the three examples, specifically the last two? It seemed to me that it did.
Yeah, I mean, it helps to know those examples, but we're really not talking necessarily about bodhisattvas.
Well, right.
Are we going to get marked up if we only put those bodhisattvas on the test?
Not at all, because I think the author is trying to overkill. I think he's trying to say...
Keep your mind on the bodhisattva ball.
Much less someone on the first seven levels, even somebody on the 8th, 9th, and 10th levels, still sees things.
By excluding,
I don't think it's restricted to the last three levels. And that's what confused you. And it also confused you because I introduced it wrongly the first time. The Prasangika have a different idea about the last three levels. And I, you know, I went through 25,000 pages of text on just and still not very clear to me, so I'm still working on it. That's why I didn't publish the thing.
Well, it's nice to know that.
And I've gotten different explanations from different people, and I'm not terrified with them. I'm going to study it. And apparently the Prasangikas and the Svajantrikas disagree about it. So.
Well, thank you for not marking me wrong in the homework and test, even though apparently I didn't get it quite correct.
Any other...
About the reading.
I don't expect you to digest all the reading. It's good that you read it, and it's important that you read it. But if you have any questions, tell me.
Well, I mean, I just don't understand like the basic.
Yeah, I don't think you
ideas
know
that are in this paragraph and the basic ideas that are. Well, I don't know if I can even formulate questions. I mean, if you could explain that paragraph, which is. Page 3 of our reading, last week's reading.
Top?
Well, I'll talk about
the top
a couple
one.
Things there. In this school, what makes things deceptive reality is partly that they are perceived by a deceptive state of mind.
Right.
They emphasize not so much that there's a discrepancy between the way a thing appears and the way the thing is, which is what we have been calling deceptive.
Right.
But they say that state of mind is not that state of mind is not grasping to them as being self-existent, but it's infected by grasping to self-existence. I call it colored.
Right.
But they say that state of mind is not what, that state of mind is not grasping to them as being self-existent, but it's infected by the by grasping to self-existence. I call it colored. It's like a glass, and it's seeing everything as rose-colored. I mean, it's got sunglasses on. The sunglasses are self, are grasping to self-existence. But the eyes, there's nothing wrong with the eyes. The eyes see flowers, the eyes see the lamb. That's all correct. There's no problem with that. There's some other thing in the back of your mind when you look at the lamb that's wrong. And that's going on at the same time as the correct state of mind, which is saying, this is a lamb. That state of mind is called deceptive. So think of deceptive mind.
It just says this is a lamb. It's yeah, not grasping.
Yeah. It happens to be infected by grasping, and it's always colored by grasping.
More
but it itself is not the grasping to self-existence.
But it's still more than mere appearance.
Yeah, and that's, I think, one key. And Ariel and I were talking about in the car, and we were reading the parts that I chopped out. I didn't want to give you 20 pages. But it was an interesting thing in the book. It said, why do we say that both conditions have to be present? Why does something have to be coming from that side, although not uniquely, although not by itself? And why is it that something has to come from my side? Why are both things necessary? And the book says, if you help me if I don't get it straight. It has to be, something has to be appearing to me. From that side, it has to have a way of existing,
right?
Of its own,
that's
although not a unique way of existing.
Is that when they say there has to be substance, but then it?
There has to be something appearing.
Some,
to
yeah.
Because if there weren't,
then you wouldn't be.
It wouldn't
be deceptive reality. It
would be something that
you'd be mind only school.
Now don't be mind only school. I gotta get this straight.
That's the other.
Yeah, if it were only from my side, then if I said pink elephants, they would exist. If I believed in pink elephants, and if I made up the word pink elephants, and I had an imagination, I had a fantasy of pink elephants, that would be enough for them to exist. If it didn't require the participation of a thing from its side, then anything I chose to dream up would exist. So there must be something out there for there to be a fact, an existence. It has to be showing something to me, for me to give the name. If it didn't depend on my side, this is the important one in the Sotantrika. If that thing could exist on its own without my participation, then a person who doesn't know what a lamp is, and who doesn't know the word lamp, and doesn't have any concept of lamp, the minute he looked at that, he'd say, oh, that's a lamp. That thing itself would suggest lamp to everybody, whether or not they were familiar with the lamp or not, whether or not they knew the name, whether or not they were able to discriminate this as a lamp. You know, Eskimos see 17 kinds of white, 17 shades of whiteness in snow. They have 17 different words for different kinds of snow, which you can't distinguish. If the snow didn't require my participation from my side to be what it is, then the minute I walked to Alaska, you know, and walked out of the plane, I'd say, oh, that's type number 15. You know, because it would be appearing to me as type number 15 without my having to name it or discriminate it or distinguish it.
And that, but is that the grasping, or the grasping
no,
is the is
no.
the grasping?
Both
is
of
the
these are fine.
Fine.
No problem with that. Otherwise, we couldn't live in the world. We couldn't say this is that. The deceptive state of mind in this school is establishing relative reality. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. But they say, if you are going to tell me that that thing has some existence on its own without my participation, well, then you get the 17 types of snow. Then it would suggest itself to everyone the same way.
Right.
If just by appearing, it could exist. If it didn't require my participation in dividing out the things I are not it, and, you know, delineating it.
Then I would have self-existence.
Okay, but if you,
that's what self-existence means to them. And that's very important. Self-existence means to them, the lower schools, and most people think that thing's a lamp by itself. And they think, that's why you get into trouble at work. I mean, that's why the angry man is... And you swear, you feel great when other people confirm your opinion of the guy. You say, he's really bad, and they say, oh yeah, he's bad, I've seen that too. And you get really upset when they say, well, he seems like a nice guy to me. And you say, well, you just haven't seen that in the past. You know, you don't know what's going on. You didn't see what he said to me. You know, that's the root of problems. So that's gakcha. Gakcha is a lamp that could be a lamp without me knowing it was a lamp. I think that helps clear it up a lot. It does in my mind. Because I have trouble too, and you're the guinea pig. I told you that before. The second time I explain this, it's very clear. The third time, it's okay. Yeah.
What is the flower bringing that makes it possible for me to perceive it instead of my just saying, oh, flower? So, but it brings something to...
Oh, yeah.
And what is that?
It is... it's appearing to your mind as flower. And if the existence of a flower did not depend on any objective reality from the other side, right? Mm-hmm. Then anything I could imagine would really exist. If it were only coming from my side, then anything I could imagine would really exist.
So then what is it again?
So there must be something out there. But the normal mistake that people make, and the way you get up from the last school to, or from the lower schools to Svatantrika, is you graduate by saying, hey, it's not out there by itself, the way all of us take it to be. I mean, if I say, is there flowers over there? I say, yes, of course there's flowers over there. Would there be flowers if you left them? Yes, of course there'd be flowers over there. Are there flowers out there? Right. Do they exist by themselves? Yes. They don't require anything from me. They're there. You hold that. You really do hold that. And that's a root of some problems.
But my question is...
Yeah. No, fine. I mean, questions. Because if you're still confused, I need questions.
The question is, they bring something with their little purported selves that make us able to perceive them. I mean,
right.
They bring their hat.
Right.
Now, what is it that they're bringing, please?
You could say, you want this school? They're bringing... they're bringing an appearance of flowers, okay, but not a unique appearance of flowers. Not such a concrete appearance of flowers that anyone who walked in here would say, "Oh, daisies, white carnations." Even some African who didn't know English, you know, if they had that strong of an identity. As you actually instinctively think they do, then they would be flowers to everybody.
Well, you're doing the same thing, but it's not.
What they bring to you is a suggestion of flowers to the mind which has been taught to discriminate flowers.
Maybe we could get...
You're asking me, divorce it from my mind. What is it bringing to the situation? And I say you can't divorce it.
I don't even know what it is that's bringing the flower. But
you want me to say, oh, the flowers bring their color and shape to this situation, and then you bring the name and the discrimination of them as well. The point is that they can't be divorced. They have a way of being which they are showing to you, but it's not inherent in them or unique to them. It's not so unique that anyone who came in would see them the same way as you do. And that's what this... That's
they have a way that you...
They do exist out there.
Okay, well, I don't want to take up
I want to clear it because I felt the uncertainty, and I had the uncertainty, and I went and studied it.
But you're just saying they have a way of existing.
Have a way of being.
It would be...
From their side. Yeah.
Well, they perceive...
They have an appearance.
Too, right?
No.
Oh, I
think they have no mind. They are appearing to you, is what I'm saying. It's not that you're making them up. That's what I'm trying to say. On one extreme, it's not that you are making them up. On the other extreme, it's not that anyone who walked in here would recognize them to be exactly what you would recognize them to be. So there's 50-50. There's something coming from their side, and there's something coming from your side. And otherwise, they can't be what they are. That's what they say. And they are rejecting primarily the lower school and all human beings who would, if you said to a guy on the street, are the flowers exist over there? Do they have their own existence? Of course. If a guy walked in here who was from some other planet and never seen flowers before, didn't know what a flower was, had no name for a flower, would he? Would there still be flowers there? If you say yes, you have a child.
Do we all bring the same?
You say yes. There's something there which we designate as flowers.
Right.
They would see something. Oh, interesting. Something I've never seen before.
I don't think they would even see the. You see, they might not even distinguish those pieces of color from the wall or something.
So then there are things in front of us right now that we haven't seen before because they come from other planets.
There's a white rectangle and there's some yellow spots.
Come on, they're not. If they're myopic and they can't see in three dimensions, maybe.
Come back to your cultural anthropology examples. They're much easier because it has to do with culturally determined perceptions, like color and distinguishing types of snow.
Even color. Mm.
Yeah, I know, but it's easier than making up people from outer space.
What if you were psychic? If you could see something, it was actually there, but most people around you are not perceptive enough to see. If you're not hallucinating, it really is coming to you, but only you can perceive it. How?
That's acceptable. That's acceptable.
But then you have to take that person's word for it that they're not.
Well, they may. I don't say that they can communicate.
But that was always.
Yeah, actually, you're not allowed to talk about those things normally in Buddhism for that reason, because there's no way to prove it to somebody. They don't know. There's no way to prove you're not lying. There's no way to communicate it to someone else. So they discourage you. You know, they say if a monk can perform miracles, then he shouldn't do it very much because it won't help other people. It's not really any benefit to the person's mind. He might have a short period of faith because just something amazing happened and then he has to go back to his normal state. The education is better.
Keep you in school that way.
Let's say that you believe this, then how does that help you get rid of your reflective emotions?
I think this is in my opinion, this is not very clear oftentimes. You know, I mean, when I discovered what Tsongkhapa is saying, you know, when I finally understood what he's trying to say, I could see how it related to not getting angry to the guy at work, for example. I think that's the way. That's the way. You just realize that it's partly coming from you. Even in this school, that you are participating. That without you, he wouldn't be an angry bad man. That's your fault, not his fault. You know, if you're going to get angry, get regretful, get sad that you did something, that you are discriminating him in this way.
Okay, but let's say that you can kind of, I can kind of understand and accept the example with the flowers or objects in an abstract, logical way. But how does that help when you're, say somebody is getting angry at me.
Right.
I'm not particularly angry, but I don't really enjoy this, and I really do believe that they are inherently angry and that
right.
It is really happening. How would I use this same argument in that, and then how would that help me get rid of...
That's it. Many times I've explained it before, and it's. I hope that I don't explain it so many times that you stop thinking about it someday. But I'll say it one more time. If he were inherently a bad person or angry, if he were inherently unpleasant, do you agree that there's people in the room, and it often happens in an office environment, who are actually enjoying him being angry at you? You see? I mean, you've had this sick thought yourself. We all do, you know. You're not quite sorry that he's yelling at the lady you don't like so much. You know, and it's not an evil thought, but it's a bad thought.
Mm-hmm.
And it must be a common thought. It's actually thought number... number nine. It's actually in the top 10 bad deeds, and it's precisely that. And so we must have it. It must, out of the 84,000 bad thoughts you can have, It's in the top ten.
And of course, asking why you counted them.
So what I mean is, it's apparently very inherent in human nature to not be that upset when someone else is having a problem.
Right.
And even to take a little bit of pleasure. It's weird, you know. I've been in work situations where my supervisor would rather see something screw up to take the pleasure out of it, out of the subordinate screwing up, than worry about the money being lost by the screw up. You know, it's weird.
Yeah,
it's like a kind of illness, you know. then that's so what I'm saying is, in one room, there's one man who's yelling at you. He's unpleasant to you, and he's pleasant to the other person. One thing cannot be both. And we're going to talk about, that's the subject tonight, actually. One object cannot be both. It cannot be good and bad at the same time. It's impossible.
But why can't we carry that? Right. He's certainly correctly, deceptive reality-wise, angry. Everybody can see
right.
He's angry.
Yeah.
It's just that his anger doesn't exist self-existently. Why is it that all of a sudden we have to drop the same thing we've been talking about all night when it comes to a person's anger? Sure, the person's angry. Everybody can see the person's angry.
No,
is
not,
the person
yeah,
angry self-existently? No.
No, some people might not take it as anger. I'm talking about him being good or bad because he's angry.
You're saying we have to turn flowers because there's these things that appear to everybody and everybody recognizes them as flowers.
I didn't say that.
Well, the definition says when it appears to the mind, we're talking about deceptive reality, okay? Which means that something that has flowerness or whatever the words you were using appears to minds that are not drunk or what have you
right.
the same way. Okay?
If they've been taught to discriminate flowers.
And also, why do
if they
not,
know the name and the concept.
Michael, why do I have right. one or the other?
So
why can't you, like, a body's just, made of legs?
Let me finish
the
her question.
But we can't call this an elephant over here. We call them flowers. We'd be crazy if we called them an elephant.
Right, because they have no suggestion of elephant.
That's right.
So that's all right.
When the person is screaming at you and they're turning red in the face, okay,
yeah.
why does your example break down there?
I didn't say he wasn't angry. I said some people see him as bad and some people see him as good.
No, but that anger...
But that's taking it a step further.
I'm making a value judgment on the anger.
Right.
You're trying to say he's not angry.
You're bad. It's just there's... You, when you talk about the flower example, you're distinguishing between a person who says, okay, they exist out there, and I don't... And
do some people see them as weapons for killing people?
Unless they have an impaired mind, I would think.
Not at all. No, certain kinds mm-hmm. of beings, if they walked in, would see these as weapons, dangerous weapons.
Okay,
weapons.
Now you're getting into the part that it's like, I just accept that on theory, okay? This is
okay.
the theoretical part, but all I'm right. saying, how can we take this example, which is, I mean, I don't...
Well, I'm trying to get there. Well, see, let me finish, and if you think at any point I say something which is not correct, stop me. Some people are enjoying him yelling at you. Some people think he's a good man.
Mm-hmm.
And you at the same moment think he's a bad man.
No.
Did I say anything wrong?
Yes. Yes, you're taking the example one step further. Before we go that far, can we stop the value judgment on the anger discuss whether the anger exists or not?
No. Because she's asking me, how does it apply to your daily life? How will it help you remove your pleasures?
Well, you're saying it doesn't exist.
What?
The anger.
I didn't say that.
Sure. It doesn't exist because you're perceiving it as anger, and another person can perceive it as being happy, so therefore it doesn't exist.
Oh, yeah, the anger is absent. The anger is empty of being in a group. I say that. I did.
Sure. But it's still anger. That's not what we're talking about. You're talking about the existence of the anger. You're saying the anger doesn't exist.
I said the anger is blank. I didn't say the anger didn't exist.
Well, when you see somebody as angry, then there's two ways to see them as angry, correctly and incorrectly.
Well, you could say the man or the man's anger. I don't mind either one. You're judging the man's anger.
If you say
the man's
blank, you're sorry.
That's right.
That to mean he's not angry.
That's right.
I don't mean that. I say the angry man is blank. How's that?
That's
he's neither good
different.
Nor bad. If he were...
Okay, but what's the analogous
statement about the flowers then, because now I've heard your example about the man not being good at bad for a long time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sorry, but you know, now I now this one makes me think in a different way, and I'm trying to apply that back to the angry man example, and I'm having difficulty making that connection. Mm. You know.
So you want to explain, do you want to talk about how the angry man is blank as being a man or not, or do you want to talk about it relating to your removing your bad thoughts?
Both. I want to find out how that connection, because I feel like at one end it's this, at the other end it's that, and I'm trying to find where they meet in the middle.
Okay. Since all the, how many heaps are there?
How many five heaps are there?
Two heaps. Why don't they just say mental heap and physical heap?
Oh, that's right.
Because they apparently are so important.
Why are two so important that they get status to be their own heap out of 46 or 52 or whatever?
The emotion.
I'm going to talk about the object of both, which is something you feel good about or something you feel bad about. Someone who irritates you or someone who makes you happy. Okay.
Well, okay, but how does that tie to the... Because it seems like you're talking about this perception thing on a much subtler level.
Well, what I'm trying to say is, I am, but I've never done that before. I've always stayed
that
on the simple
right, that's what
level
I'm trying
up
to get.
Yeah. Will it help you? What will help you in your life? And what truly will help you in your life, and what you should apply tomorrow or even tonight, is that the man is not bad, or the man is not something painful by nature. He has no nature because of being painful or pleasant, because if he did, he would be equally painful to those fellow employees of you who see him as quite pleasant at that moment. Get pleasure out of what he's saying to you at that moment. Therefore, in that level, on that level, and in that sense, he's empty of either quality, because he can't have both qualities at once, because no one thing can be bad and good at the same time. Period.
Why can't they? Why
give
they?
Me one. But let me finish with her first. Let me finish with her. So on that level of discussion, okay, we can get into his eyebrows too later. Okay?
His what?
Eyebrows, and then down to the atoms in his eyes and things like that. You know, we can do that. But on that level, that's the practical level at which it will benefit you. Now, assuming that everything I've said is correct so far, that he is blank, that he has no nature of being inherently painful, or else your fellow employees would take him as painful, or pleasant, or else you would find him pleasant, then where is it coming from? Why are you finding painful?
Because
your perception.
No, because
right. So why? Well,
wait a minute.
Because of my karma.
Because of the rose-colored glasses you were talking about.
No.
Not because of the eyeball.
No.
Because of the glass.
No.
No, but isn't the karma the glass?
Now make up your mind.
Have it directed at you instead of have it directed at the
ball. He said yes. The guy is angry, but no, you shouldn't get upset about it.
The glass and the eye.
Which is it? What is his anger? Something that the eye would see whether the glass was there or not?
Yeah.
Or okay, yeah. Good. And then the glass is describing the relative value judgment, goodness or badness to it, which
no, I
shouldn't
didn't say
be
that.
There.
I didn't say that. The colored glass?
The colored glass.
No, is whether he's self-existent or not.
Well, that's what we're saying, whether his anger is self-existent, right?
No, but that's different than saying is it self-existently good or bad.
Michael's saying that we've put the value judgment on it because we believe the anger is self-existent. That
no,
everyone
can say that.
No.
Sure.
I
you said that,
that
he really is
that?
Angry.
Did I ever say the anger is self-existent?
No.
No, you said our misperception that it is self-existent is what causes us to...
No, he said it.
I never denied
that
he's angry.
He's a bad person.
Well, that's what I mean by the value judgment. That he's a bad person.
Okay, well, anyway... Who's forcing you to see him as... Why? Who's forcing it to be painful for you? Who's forcing you to see it as painful?
The karma of my previous actions.
Which were good or bad?
Probably bad.
Yeah, if pain is bad, then the karma was bad. That's so simple. that it blows over everyone.
What about if you seem angry, but you don't get upset?
I could see a person
getting angry at somebody, and I say, well, this person is very angry.
No, I'm talking about suffering. He's talking about not upset, like you don't get angry.
Whatever, anger. You see the person angry at another person, it's not affecting you. They're like, the person is not...
I'm talking about cases where it does affect me directly, because I asked him how to get rid of my emotions.
If I have a bad emotion, for example,
where I'm feeling a bad emotion, I'm asking him to explain how I could not feel the bad emotion. So we're talking, you know, to begin with, we're talking about an example where I am feeling a bad emotion.
You got to divide. What I'm saying is, the pain, the painfulness to you. If it were self-existent, I suppose you should get angry about it. But since it's not self-existent, meaning that it comes from causes and that it's imputed on an otherwise blank person by your karma, then you should do something about it. Can you prevent it from being painful once the result has already come out?
No.
That contradicts all principles of causation accepted by science, accepted by everyone in the universe, accepted by all farmers. You know, no farmer expects that after the corn has grown already and it came out lousy because he didn't put enough fertilizer, that he can now run and put fertilizer on it and it'll suddenly change. That's what is a big misconception about Buddhist teaching, of people who say, if I understood his emptiness, right now he would stop being unpleasant to me. That's incorrect. The result has come out.
Well, what about Michael, what I said before?
Yeah. Excuse me. It's just trying to say... Well, you asked me to apply it to a situation which will help you remove your clutches, and that's what I'm saying, yeah. Relative to flowers over which you have no emotion, no feeling, you can't get desire about, you can't get angry about, you can't be hurt by them, irrelevant. Not talking about that. I mean, you asked me to give you an example that would apply to your life.
Well, what I'm really asking you to do, and I guess we should, I'll just ask you later, but what I'm really trying to get you to do is to... This seems like a different level of
emptiness you're talking about. I'm trying to get you to the other level, but it doesn't directly help your life and you're removing your suffering.
This one doesn't.
No, not directly.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Michael, you said back to
that I could have spent
many days, and most teachers do, I think, talking about the emptiness of him, whether or not he's even there. And that's a valid thing to discuss. But it's not gonna help. I mean, so where do you go from
there? So there is no connection there. If you talk about somebody else's emptiness,
it's good as an example.
Yeah.
Then you apply it to your life. But most people, I think, if you've maybe noticed that you've had teachings on emptiness many times, the person has explained how a beautiful girl is really empty, but it didn't help me for years. You know, so who cares? She looks great to me. Okay. So she has a different mode of being pretty than I thought she had. But it doesn't change anything. You know, Alex Brazin wrote this long thing about how the girl is made up of atoms, you know, and therefore I shouldn't have desires. And fine, but I look at the and okay, she's made up of atoms, but I'm concentrating on the girl. You know? It doesn't help me. It doesn't help me stop my place.
I think most teachings break down at that point.
You know, you say, well, okay, so she's atoms, you know, what do I do now? And they say, well, she's empty, you know, don't have desire.
No, I thought
she's looking at
her. Fear is, you know, dissolving and rotting. And
no, that is not an emptiness meditation.
No, it's not a method of desire meditation.
No, it does not get rid of desire. It suppresses desire.
I mean,
it cannot get rid of desire. That's why the definition of Vara said what?
Sensation,
which comes from
the individual analysis.
Right. It doesn't say coming from learning all the little tricks to see she's not going to have desire for her.
So that means that all these little tricks that we learn are really just sort
they're
of
very virtuous and they're very holy. And you should learn them.
You should try and do them.
Until you understand emptiness, what are you going to do? Once you have the virtues to understand emptiness, you use it. Shantideva didn't waste the first eight chapters of this Bodhicitta, but when he got to the ninth one, he told you the truth.
And so, so when you do get to the point of having this intellectual understanding, then what, shift gears and leave that behind?
No, you in practice, you end up using both, because you're not so pure or good, and your understanding of emptiness is not so great. If you see a foxy girl, you're like, you know, it doesn't work. You're not, that's why the path of habituation has so many divisions to it. It's getting better and better at applying your emptiness understanding to your practice. That's why the kleshas have, like, I don't know, 128 shades that you're getting rid of little bit, which is, so you keep those other methods. But those are called worldly methods. They're called jiktim bilam. And this method is called the one beyond the world.
Michael? Okay, so back to the example I said last time. If you have somebody like a Hitler or a Stalin or a Li Peng, now, from our normal perception, these people do tremendous evil. So you're saying all these victims, they just had bad karma, and Hitler's blank. You can't make any value judgment on somebody that has done such massive destruction. It's like, oh, he's okay. He's a nice guy.
No.
It's true nature. I think he has a true nature of evil, but everything he does is evil.
I would say the opposite. You know, I've had people ask me that many times, but I think you should concentrate on the opposite thing, which is that he, conventionally speaking, apparently speaking, which is the world that we're living in, he's hurting people. Now you can truly stop him with love. You know, if necessary, the thing is called elimination. The practice is called elimination. You do it. But at that, when you do it, you won't have any anger, no hatred. I mean, what did the Dalai Lama say about Saddam Hussein in the
He said
we're all people that gave him the weapons. They ran.
No, he said my heart goes out to him, but he was under certain conditions.
He said he may be a bad man, but my heart goes out.
But anyway, I'm not saying don't concentrate on it that way. Concentrate. It's your duty, Bodhisattva's duty, to stop evil. If you see any kind of evil, it's your duty, your absolute duty to stop it, to attempt to stop it.
But if you're...
with no kind of anger or hatred.
So the example you gave is that, okay, when you keep using the boss, that's a very benign example, because, you know, boss...
It's the one place where I can collect the most bad karma quickly in my life.
But you have to be more clear on that. You've been describing the boss and the boss's anger in an all-or-nothing kind of situation, vis-a-vis your reaction to it, vis-a-vis your being upset by it, okay? Right. You're making it sound like there is no anger. Okay.
He never said that.
But
I perceive what Michael's saying differently.
I'm saying kind of that he's acting violently, he's acting mad.
Right.
And some people enjoy it, and some people it's painful.
And if I see that person acting that way toward me, you're making it sound like the only way for me not to be angry by that is to not see anger.
I didn't say that. I said precisely the opposite, and that's my dentist drill example. I say...
If he was truly angry, then...
No, if his anger was innately painful,
then everyone
would find it painful.
No, you've been saying if he truly was angry, then everyone would say, yes, he's angry. Look, I see he's angry. You're right.
If I wanted to go to that level, that's true also. But I've never gone to that level with you. I have no interest in going to that level with you. I want you not to collect that karma. That's all.
Jeffrey Dahmer, okay? I mean, maybe his mother likes him. But victims, every victim, I'm sure it wasn't pleasant, no matter how pure their karma was, to be killed by him.
It was definitely unpleasant.
Right, it was unpleasant by anyone's name.
Certainly by unpleasant to them.
Right, so I would.
And certainly it may be pleasant to him.
It was pleasant to him.
The same event.
But all the victims, no matter what their karma was like, I'm sure some of the victims were nicer than others, and they all experienced it as unpleasant. Maybe
their karma was totally equal. Whatever deed they did in the past to be killed was totally the same. They were in this life, you know, nice, bad, indifferent. This is why good people get hurt. This is why injustice occurs. This is the explanation.
Wait a minute, Michael. What about the Dalai Lama that I have to get out of Tibet? Are you trying to tell us that he did something bad, that he had to be out of this country?
In a non-high level explanation, yes. In the highest level explanation, if he is truly a Buddha, he's just trying to teach us something.
And he is teaching us.
We need to teach people better outside of the country.
Well, I agree with that. I think that would be
to frankly, to say but with certainty that you know which one is true is a lie. You know, you have to say it's quite possible he's not looking at his father, he's trying to teach me something. It's quite possible he's a normal man who got kicked out of his country. I don't know. I really don't know. I can use logic to try to establish one or the other. And you'll learn those methods. We're learning them in New Jersey.
I think it was the Karmapa that was also killed in a car accident. And you
from your side, you know, oh, he's Avalokiteshvara. He's just trying to help us. He's trying to show something. This is, you don't have any proof.
That's why I don't believe a lot of people.
No, you don't have any proof. And that's why it's sometimes personally irritating when I meet people who are insisting to me that this is true, and they don't have any basis to say that.
They wear the robes and therefore they have to be believed and honored. I don't believe that.
But there are ways to establish logically that he is Avalokiteshvara and that he is showing us this.
What about
but if you can't give me those reasons, I don't want to hear
about them. What about Michael, the guy who was killed in another car accident?
Or else you'll be more confused.
Yeah. How do you explain that?
But do you feel better about the prophet, I mean about what we learned? I mean, is it more clear? I think keep your mind on the fact that if there wasn't anything going on from its side, then what?
Then
if it didn't require anything from its side, then anything I can imagine would exist. If it didn't require anything coming from the other side, then anything I can imagine would exist. And if it didn't require anything from my side, then what?
Then anybody would see it the same way.
Exactly the same way. It would be the same thing to a person, the example in the book says, who doesn't even know the word for flower or have any idea of the concept of flower. Mm-hmm. And that's a authentical way. It's not the highest explanation. What's interesting is, and we were talking about in the car, although the explanation in this way directly rejects the very lowest explanations, that the thing exists out there on its own, it's not totally inconsistent with the highest explanation, the Prasangika. Tsongkhapa says that. And so you got to cook that. Okay. All right. We're going to start. By the way, that whole thing last week was supposed to be the first 15 minutes of the class. And I read it and I said, this is going to take a whole class. So I pushed my tray back to one class. And and we covered all that in one class.
Michael,
are you
going to
treat
the
page
5 and 6 of the 7?
You
really go through where he mentioned
the Prasangika? No, I'm not going to. No. Basically, you just have to understand that, for example, to exist by definition is accepted by the Satantrika, the lower Madhyamika, as something that really exists. And the higher school, the Prasangika says, no, it's the same as being self-existent. And then you have to say, well, what do they mean when they say exist by definition? What do we mean by when they say exist by definition? And is it possible that we're thinking the same thing about that word and they just don't understand and I do? Or do we really think different things when we say that word and maybe they're not so crazy after all? That's a whole other subject.
Just one point of information that's something that confused me down page 3 when you're in the bottom paragraph. When you're talking about first, this seed makes every living creature who's not a Buddha see everything. Every existing phenomenon, physical form, and the rest looks as if they were a pure, discrete entity. The use of the word pure there?
Yeah, pure means self existence. In Madhyamika,
okay.
In the study of emptiness,
that means that's the opposite of the way I think most people would think when they read this.
Right. It does say pure.
How does the Madhyamika?
I can't.
On page one of that, the second, third line, I was talking about three of basic knowledge.
We're going to talk about that tonight.
Of all things that have no real nature of arising.
We're going to talk about
that. Meaning that they arise on independence.
Right. Okay. We're going to talk about it tonight. Okay, tonight we start five different arguments for emptiness. And it's going to go into the next...
20, what are you talking about?
It's going to go into the next week also. But I want to get through... I only want to get through the first one tonight.
With us, you'll have a hard time.
And it's called Chit Jo. Chit means one. Two means many. And Jo means empty. It's a different word for empty. And we're going to talk about that tonight. It basically means that if something were self-existent, it would have to be a self-existent single thing or a self-existent plural thing. It would have to be either self-existent in one or self-existent in many. It took us all night, if we're lucky. Okay? Alright?
Singular or plural?
Yeah, that's easy. I mean, we'll talk about it. I'm not going to go into them. I just want you to know the five names. Which is on your homework.
I'm just lost.
You don't even have to know what they are.
You mean the five arguments?
The names of the five arguments.
The names of the five
arguments. I'm sorry, what are these five arguments for proof of the person?
Arguments for emptiness.
Five arguments in support of emptiness. This is Dorje, you know, it means what?
Diamond.
Lord of stone.
Good. Diamond. And Sekhma means a sliver.
What is it? Sliver?
Sliver. I've never read it. There's a text by this name. It's a diamond. It's a diamond color.
No, okay.
That's
that
guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And when you perceive emptiness directly, one of the realizations you have has to do with how close it is that the closest example in the world to emptiness is the diamond. And one of the reasons for that is that every sliver of a piece of diamond is pure diamond. It's totally the same as the whole piece of diamond. Any little shred, shard of diamond that you take off of a diamond is as pure diamond as the diamond.
Picture of like granite?
It's especially true of diamond.
Maybe true of a piece of holographic film.
No, don't make fun. Very holy, very important.
Hey, I'm not making
uncut
fun.
Uncut diamond?
It's uncut. This reasoning involves proving that things can't arise from themselves, can't arise from something else. Can't arise from ball.
From?
Ball. From something. And can't arise without a card. Four possibilities.
Or something without a card?
They can't arise from
the last.
Themselves. They can't arise from something other. Something else. They can't arise from both themselves and something else. And they can't arise without a card. You means what? You know?
Yeah.
You means exist. Ne means not exist. Ke means to arise. And gok means to deny.
Me just means not, though.
Me.
I mean
me. Me means
not.
Does not. Not exist, actually. It's different from is not.
The whole phrase mean not exist, or does it mean exist, not exist?
We'll talk about it. Okay. It's denying that a thing could grow from something which exists or something from something which doesn't exist.
made inherently exist?
I don't know. Let me get here. Roughly, denying that a thing could grow from a thing that exists or from a thing that doesn't exist. Or both or neither. Four
buttons. You say grow, do you mean rise or like grow, like from the ground grow?
We're talking, those reasons treat all changeable things, all things with causes.
Just arise.
Can be mental, could be physical.
That's a different book.
I'm sorry, you're ready.
Some spelling as before. G O G O.
This part is missing.
For the third one, you say but.
Denying that things can grow or arise from things which exist or things which don't.
And you
or
say
both
what on either, right?
More from both, more from both. The name of the reason doesn't say that. The name of the reason only says denying that things can arise from something which exists or doesn't exist.
Well, how's that different from number two? Number two says things can arise from da-da-da-da-da. Number three says denying that things can arise from da-da-da-da-da.
Number two was what? Denying that things can arise from themselves. The number two is emphasizing whether it's from themselves or from something other than themselves. And number three is emphasizing whether they're growing from something which does exist or something which doesn't exist. And we're not going to go into it tonight. I'm just going to try to cover number one, but I want you to know all five names. Number four is denying, gok, that things could grow, ge, or arise. Through any of the four, she. Possibilities.
Mush. Well, that's mushy, 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 so.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Denying that things could grow or rise. Trying to hope us.
And what it means is, and you don't have to know that yet, is that denying that multiple results can come from multiple causes.
Multiple
results could come from multiple causes. That's the first. There's going to be four, right? Number two, denying that single results could come from multiple causes. Number three, what do you get?
Both or neither.
Multiple results.
Multiple causes.
Right. Okay. Number three is that multiple results could come from single causes. And you can fill it in from yourself. And the other will be one.
No, no results coming.
No, that's not one.
Oh. Single from single, right?
Yeah. These are, I'll write the English up here for that.
That's the name for all together, please?
No, that's
no,
the name
for five.
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 I ran out of bullets down here. Okay. By the way, I warn you one thing. The reading this time is very difficult. So don't get frustrated. Don't go crazy about it. If you could understand everything on the first shot, you'd be the first person in history. Okay, that's why monks spend years on this. And it's worth it. The pain is worth it. And if you don't have some pain, you're not learning. And that's
our karma if we have pain.
No, that's the fact. It's the fact of it. It's holy, it's deep, and it's hard. And you need it. And it's very good for your mind to struggle with these things. After a while, you find your mind becomes sharper, actually. Better able to handle long thoughts. You know, long, difficult ideas. You'll get some better ability. Tendel Kujutsu, okay? Tendel means interdependence. It's what people call dependent origination.
Dependence origination?
Dependent origination.
Same thing, you mean? The same thing as interdependence?
I call it interdependence. For reasons which I'll show you someday.
Okay.
Ki means of. OF. And Rikpa means reasoning. Tendel means dependence. This is basically where you say things are not self-existent because existent because they depend on other things. That's the one you're probably most familiar with.
So
it's
in the last class, yeah.
It's its nickname is Rikpa Gyalpo. You should know that. Nickname for the last reason, the fifth one, the one about dependence, is Rikpa Gyalpo. The nickname for the last reason, the fifth one, the one about dependence, is Rikpa Gyalpo.
King of reasoning?
Yeah. King of reasoning. Gyalpo means king. This is the ultimate one. This is the most powerful one. All the other ones boil down to number five. That's why you've always heard number five. The Lama doesn't have more than 24 hours to go through this, but he'll teach you number five.
What does it mean? I'm sorry.
Rikpa means of reasoning, and Gyalpo means king. King of reasons. The highest reason.
So king means highest in this case.
Yeah, number one. The best one. Most effective one. Tonight's class is going to run over a little bit. I hope you don't mind. Okay. I'm going to start the first week. We won't run over. We'll run over like 10 minutes. I think we can do it. Okay. What's the first meeting? I'll go around the table. Let me make sure everyone's done right. Tram, what's number one? You seem to be the best.
After you pick up,
I think you're right. What's number one? What's reason number one? Or did you write it down?
No, I
didn't. Okay, Faith?
If something was suffering.
What's in, just the name of it?
Shiktidra.
Which is, means what?
Which is one many empty. If something was suffering.
I called it in the reading. The emptiness of one or many. So that's all you have to know. The emptiness of one or many. That's the name of the first reading. Kylie, what's the name of the second reading?
Buddhistikma.
Which means what?
Diamond sliver.
Okay. Sliver of diamond, and that's all you have to know.
How do you spell that word?
Sliver, right? It's like liver with an S. It means a little piece. If you break them in pieces. By the way, the classical sekma, if you're into this word, is when a wave breaks on a beach and these little sekmas come out of seawater.
Frost.
It gets the sand and then these little droplets of spray come out. Those are called sekmas.
I think
I haven't.
Diamonds can be destroyed. Somewhere I read, like all the diamonds or something can destroy it or something.
That's how you cut them. But nothing in the, there is no thing in the universe which is probably in that period. It is almost an ultimate truth in a sense. Anyway, number three.
Yume kekok. Kekok. Exists not to rise to deny.
the denial. That thing which exists.
Are you saying the definition? Like
I'm just giving you the name, and that's all I want on your homework.
Okay, I'm sorry. Could you repeat
it? Prick up your ears. It's at the bottom of page 3 on your reading.
The denial
that thing which exists or do not exist.
Oh, shit.
Which exists or do not exist could arise. That was reason number...
Three.
Okay. Number four.
Denial that things could arise to any of the four possibilities.
Yes. It's on page 4 of your reading, in the middle. It says, the denial... that things... could arise through any of the four possibilities. Vilma, number 5. What's in, just the name?
Tendril ki rikpa.
Right.
Things are not self-existent because they depend on other things.
Yeah, so just the name of the reasoning is what?
Reasoning
of interdependence. Reasoning of interdependence, a.k.a.
King of Reasoning.
Okay. Also known as the King of Reasoning. But you better, on your homework, you better call it up dependence, okay? King of Reasoning.
I mean interdependence.
Interdependence. Okay, one more step and we'll take a break.
Will you call it the 12 length interdependence?
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about it. Arising, dependent arising, dependent arising is wrong, period. Yeah, because it doesn't fit things which don't arise. So, dendo, we can talk about it anyway. Okay, now you get into reasoning. I haven't done it with you, one day, I think in the second course from now, the fourth course maybe, we'll do a course on logic, on Buddhist logic. You need Buddhist logic to prove the spiritual thing that you can perceive with your eyes and ears. Otherwise, according to Dharmakirti, you can't even take refuge. You have no basis on which to believe in future or past lives, other than your nice instincts that you people have from your past lives. You have no basis of believing in that without understanding logic. So here you get your first dose. Okay? If you try to read the reading, I don't get upset if you can't understand it. But it also doesn't mean don't try to break the code if you can.
Michael, is this the same thing that Rinpoche talked about in Jersey? It's the same topic.
Very similar. Yeah. Okay. So, when you, in Buddhism, you start out, there's going to be three parts to every logical statement. The first part is the subject. What are we talking about? And I always start it with the word consider.
That's one of the three parts of subjects.
Yep. The subject is the first part of any Buddhist reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to talk about? That's where they slap their hand. Kill some chair. When you start a debate with somebody, you have to say, what are you talking about? I'm talking about Kempa Sum. What's Kempa Sum? The three knowledges. That's how you open every debate. The guy has to know what you want to debate about. No, let's debate about Tom. Tom Chiraviti. Okay. So the first thing is your subject. What are we talking about? We're talking about the three knowledges. What are the three knowledges? You know the last one. What's the ultimate knowledge?
Omniscience.
So number three, you know. It's called knowledge of all things in your text. Okay? Knowledge of all things. You have to learn these three knowledges. Okay? You don't have it. Yeah, we didn't do it yet. It's the subject of this book. Right?
Subject of the
Abhisamma Ahankara. The first one is called basic knowledge.
Give me your talk.
Okay. Basic knowledge means the perception of emptiness. Of course, you knew that.
No. Directly, or?
I'm afraid you asked me that and my computer went down.
Which one, up here?
The problem is, if you have the other one, you start to depend on it.
Probably not.
What is it?
I won't take a shot. Right now, I'm going to say perception of emptiness by a Hinayana person.
How do you spell Hinayana?
I shouldn't say emptiness, please change that. Selflessness. In this school, they don't call it emptiness.
Can you say it again, please?
Selflessness. No self. You can say no self, I don't mind. When a person on the bottom two tracks, the Hinayana, the lower way, when they see selflessness, that's what basic knowledge means. That is basically.
Now, to us, with our hat, that word means emptiness?
No.
We're not talking about emptiness, then. You said something wrong when you said the perception of emptiness.
Yeah, I should not have said it. I should have said perception of selflessness.
And it's got nothing to do with what we know of as the perception of emptiness.
Well, it's similar, but a different idea of what it is.
Oh, it's the same thing thought of differently, or it's a different thing entirely?
It's similar.
Same thing. Misunderstood. Yeah, very
self-aware.
Not the same thing, because it doesn't include phenomena. Number two is path knowledge. Well, we're going to get the big guy. Path knowledge is, what do you guess it is? It's short of omniscience, it's better than a Hinayana realization.
How to get there?
Habituation?
No. Tongla.
Close. The perception of emptiness by a bodhisattva.
Which is?
I like it.
A bodhisattva tongue long.
Do destroyers get in here anymore?
You're a bodhisattva.
No, you're not. Not necessarily.
Not bodhisattva.
No.
Oh, no, we're not talking full distortion. No.
Well, one minute we're in the Hinayana, and the next minute we're...
Possibly.
Yeah, I didn't mention full distortion, and I'm not talking about...
Don't look at them there, bro.
You mean selflessness?
And now we can see it, because they think that the selflessness is the ego, it's not the ego.
What is this? Think,
but I'm not going to talk about that.
What did you say path knowledge was again?
Perception of emptiness by voice.
And we're talking about the direct perception here, right? Or we're
still... I don't want to bite on that. I want to share it. I'm just going to leave it at that. Those are the three knowledges. This is, in fact, the main subject of this book that we're studying. And all the things that you're going to learn in the first course only relate to the third. We haven't even mentioned these two. You're not going to get into those.
What will you learn? Which course?
In this 6 weeks. You are in the first... You're never going to get out of the first chapter. You're never getting out of the first third of the first chapter. We spend 4 years on the first chapter.
Which is the third part, the seed.
It's all subjects about seed. Mm-hmm. And you can guess that. You've been spending the bottom of the It's all related. These are all qualities that relate to omniscience.
We're not going to get out of the first two, did you say?
You're not going to get to the first two in this course.
First two what?
These two knowledges.
We're not going to get to those. We're going to just work on C in this course.
Right. But tonight we're talking about... Why did I write this? What's the first part of this? What's this the first part of all?
Logic.
That is reasoning?
It's the first part of the first reason. The reason that things... The reasoning that proves that things are not self-existent because if they were, they could be self-existent. We're talking about the first reasoning. We're talking about the first reasoning.
What do you mean reasoning?
The first proof for emptiness. Selflessness. The first proof for selflessness, which is called the emptiness of one or many, okay, has this as its first of the three parts of the argument. First you tell the guy, what are we going to talk about? What am I going to prove has no self? That's my subject. I want to prove emptiness, but first I want to talk about the emptiness of the flower, the emptiness of the diet work. No. We want to talk about the emptiness of the three knowledges. The emptiness of these three understandings. The emptiness of these three levels.
Would it be safe to say the first proof of selflessness, that is the emptiness of one or many, applied to these three things?
Right. A little bit roughly okay. But I'd rather say the first proof of emptiness takes as its subject these three knowledges.
For the purposes of our discussion or always?
Always.
First proof of emptiness.
First proof of emptiness.
Always
takes as its subject. And that could be on your homework.
First.
The three knowledges. That's what they're debating about when they prove emptiness for this reason.
Always.
Obviously, you can apply it to other subjects later after you understand it with regard to one subject. But hopefully, you will. But in the classical presentation of this reason, they always take the three knowledges as what we're talking about, as what we want to prove our empty. We've been taking what? Tonight. What was the subject we tried to prove was empty?
Flowers.
We had disagreement about it. Was I talking about the anger? Was I talking about the man? Was I talking about his goodness or badness? This is a confusion about what am I talking about. This is a confusion about the subject. You know, what am I trying to prove is empty? So whenever you use the first reasoning, you're always trying to prove that the three knowledges are empty. Because that's the main subject of this book, actually.
Can you clarify our conceptual thinking? I thought we were trying to do a proof of emptiness, and now we're switching the tracks from focusing on emptiness to the three knowledges.
No, we're trying to prove emptiness of the three knowledges.
So are all five of these different aspects of emptiness we're proving? Five different ways of looking at emptiness?
Five different ways to prove the same thing, basically.
Emptiness of five different things.
Mainly the reason there are five different reasonings is that they prove emptiness in five different ways. But incidentally, they also take different subjects that they're trying to convert into. And the first one always takes these three novices.
Five examples.
Yeah, they're always trying to prove the emptiness of these three.
Could it take another subject then?
Sure, later. You see, first you apply it to this subject. Mm-hmm. And then later you, you know, obviously, you apply it especially to yourself, to John, or to Carol. Okay, take a break. I just want you to get, this is the easy part. What are we debating about? The three knowledges. What are we trying to prove are empty? Three knowledges. As opposed to the flower, as opposed to the diet work.
Why the three knowledges?
Because the sutra starts off from that point. The ancient sutra starts off from that. And it's, okay, you really want to know?
Yeah.
I don't want any blank looks. Don't write anything. See, asking a question, this is just what happens. Spontaneous spirit believes that your mental consciousness is you.
Okay.
Liana is Liana's awareness of Liana's thoughts.
Okay.
Ultimately, higher school doesn't accept that. In a sense, that makes sense. That's the driver. That's the person listening to the thoughts in your mind. It's not a bad position. So if you improve the emptiness of mind, you can improve the emptiness of you. And that's the emptiness which is supposed to save you from suffering. The emptiness you perceive when you perceive emptiness directly for the first time will always be the emptiness of yourself. And somehow that's very important. And if you want to know how it's important,
start meditating.
No, what? Talking, I'm not. Actually, when you perceive emptiness the first time, it won't be about the guy at work. You know, what makes him appear bad, what makes him appear good. It'll be understanding what makes you appear in any way to yourself, which is a very deep subject. You know. Why do I appear to myself today as depressed? You know? Why do I appear to myself today as confused? You know, this is ultimately what will save you.
Michael, but you can only perceive emptiness in a deep state of meditation. You cannot
directly. You perceived it tonight on many different levels, and that's very good.
So when you walk down the street and you think people are empty, I mean, you know, like you have an image of these people, like this empty body that is covered by, that's not empty.
Not
emptiness.
Yeah, I hope nothing else that no person ever comes out of these classes ever said such a thing.
That's a big part. There's a part.
I don't think you have to worry about that in this neighborhood.
Have some. Now
I see why the brilliance of you picking this neighborhood. There's no chance that anyone will walk out of here and see these characters out there and think they're just empty.
Number two is the characteristic we are asserting, the characteristic we claim that the subject has, the characteristic we are trying to what?
Prove
about the subject.
Okay.
It's the characteristic which are the person listening to us doesn't see yet. This is why we're trying to prove it.
Oh.
Don't see it because you're standing.
Does it have a title, number three, Michael?
Yeah, this is the reason.
Reason.
And all. This is your first one, it's like in your initiation, okay? Hopefully your life will be full of these in the future. This is what we debate about for hours and hours and hours in the monastery. Every argument we use has to have these three parts. And you'll study the parts, and it's a whole thing. I studied it for 18 years, and then I found out what it was for.
The parts. You studied the parts or the parts of?
The form of some logic, formal logic.
Oh, the parts of logic.
Yeah, that's logical reasoning. I didn't really understand until this year what the specific reason was.
Is number three the third part of the logical statement?
Yeah, that's the reason. Number three is the reason. By the way, this could very well be on your quiz, even if it weren't on your homework, which normally don't do. Now I asked Rujira, because she's the only born Buddhist. Are the three knowledges one or many? Are they one thing or many things? Three knowledges. These three knowledges.
Uh-huh.
Are they one thing or more than one thing?
If you're saying three knowledge,
then
it's more than one.
Okay, good. So they are. Do I say that they are not many? Can I say that the three knowledges are not many?
Not logical.
No, they are three. They're plural. They're more than one.
Is this continuing the argument? This is, you're now in touch.
Well, if I happen to ask you on some occasion, are the three knowledges one or many? I hope you'll say what she said, which was correct. Obviously, there are many. They're not one. Many means more than one, okay? I could have said plural, but I didn't want to do that. Okay. Do they exist?
They are posited to exist by the station.
No, do they exist? I mean, I ask, do the three knowledges exist?
Yes. Of course they do.
Of course they do. In this school, how could you prove that?
How could you prove that they exist?
Yeah, if I say, why do you think they exist?
Because they appear and I perceive them.
Good. Very, very nice.
They would.
Okay. Because they appear to me, because I perceive them. They're doing what they have to do, and I'm doing what I have to do. If they didn't appear to me, what?
They didn't appear to you?
They didn't have to appear to me.
Then you're able to create knowledges.
I can make up three knowledges. If it's just from my side, I could say four knowledges. I could say six knowledges. What if it didn't have to come from my side? Then everybody who walked into a room where the three knowledges were, would say, oh, hey, three knowledges. Path knowledge, basic knowledge, knowledge of Buddha. Hey, I know what those are. Even people who never heard of them. If they opened up this book in Tibetan and they saw the Tibetan word, they'd say, hey, three knowledges. Yeah.
So before I was a Buddhist, the three knowledges did not appear to me. At that time, they did not exist. Now that I'm a Buddhist and I've discovered them, now they do exist. They've come into existence.
You can confirm their existence. They exist. You can establish their existence because they appear to you and you name them.
So I really could not confirm their non-existence before I was a Buddhist. Then.
Right.
But they did exist because an unimpaired mind perceived them before you knew about them.
So I.e. a Buddhist mind. At least. Okay. All right. Well, I wish I could perceive them. Anyway. Okay, so we've established a couple of things. They really are not really. They are many. And they do exist. But do they exist really? Do they really exist?
What do you mean, really?
Ah, I love it. Nice.
Right?
In this school, what do I mean when I say really?
Independently?
The way that most people think they exist, which is what?
Self-existent.
That's too simple. Be more specific to this.
Cock chocolate.
Yeah, which means what? The opposite of what we just said. Which would be that they exist from their own side, in their own unique way of being. That's a fancy way of saying they exist out there. I can see them. They're there. It doesn't depend on me. Those are flowers. Those are half ugly flowers. And those are daisies and those are orchids and those are from. They just are.
So it really means.
Without, doesn't depend on me at all. They're out there. And they have their unique identity, independent of me. Which is really what you think in the back of your mind. Which is really the way you color all things that you see.
You have to know.
Is it wrong that you've seen those flowers? No. Is it uncolored? No. Is it tainted? Yes. Is it impaired? No.
Michael? Question. Do you mean to say, is it wrong that you see them as flowers?
Yeah, I mean, are there flowers there? Obviously they exist.
Right.
Do they exist the way the back of my mind thinks that they exist out there independent of me? They don't exist that way. Is my perception of them as flowers wrong? No. That's what we call deceptive perception. That's fine. Acceptable. But when I ask Laura Siegel, how do they exist? And she thinks, well, they're just there. That's unacceptable. That's your rose colors coming out. That's your dung-thin, your grasping self-existent, asserting yourself. Okay? It is not your deceptive mind. Your deceptive mind is just saying, these are flowers. And the rotten little, hanger-oner, the little mental function in the back there called ignorance is saying, they exist out there on their own, and everyone should see them the way I do. And that causes problems. Conflict. I'll go two more steps and then I'll stop.
Can I ask a question? You said number three was conclusion. And the logical
reason. So if I asked you on a home, do they exist really in this cool? What do they mean by really?
Self-existent.
Too simple. Be more specific to this school.
Independent
of those two requirements, that they are appearing and that I'm seeing them that way. Or you can simplify it to this, and I'll accept it if it happened on your homework, that they exist out there on their own with their own unique identity, independent of me. That they could exist out there on their own with their own unique identity, independent of me. Everyone should see them the same way I do. They are daisies and white carnations, and everyone should see them the way I do. That's what really means. So, do the three knowledges exist really? Do they exist independent of my perception of them?
Nothing.
Right, nothing. That's Santantika. That's the guts of Santantika. You just got it. That's kind of nice. Okay.
Michael, didn't you say there were three parts to life? Yeah. This is number four.
Sometimes you can have a four. Sure. I'm serious. I'm not kidding.
No, because I'm
the fourth is optional. Step number four is optional.
That's four.
Step number four is a good example. You could say supporting example.
Supporting example. Good supporting example.
By the way, one quality of the example is that the other person should already have seen it and introduced to it.
What is it? A reflection?
Of an image in a mirror. Why is this a good example? Vilma, take a shot.
Why is this a good example?
To prove that something doesn't really exist. Use your first reaction.
Of what, a mirror?
Yeah, the reflection.
Why is a reflection a good example?
For unreality.
Because it doesn't have any substance. Reflection doesn't have...
That's pretty good.
If it's a reflection of a glass.
What happens when a baby is in front of me?
They think it's real.
Yeah. Okay. That's all. To a baby, I mean, to someone who doesn't know, it looks like the person is inside the glass. The person inside the glass is not really a person, but looks like one. It's an example of something that looks real but isn't. Why, Stillwell, why do the flowers look real but are not? Svatantrika, answer please.
They look real because we see them out there as existing on their own, independent of our perception. But in turn, they're real because they're dependent upon perception as well as being.
Okay, yeah. That impression, which is in the back of your mind all the time, and you have it, you do have it, is that they are objectively out there, independent of you. And that's the baby in the mirror. It looks real, but it's not. And that's all in the night.
Sashi Bhagi Jushinne Tosham Vira Vinshinyande Yampadi Sange Shindu Mitte Uwagi Jogunanda Shingla
Class 8.